Now we're going to be talking about certain different bases historically to now, which have been used or been the philosophies behind conducting different kinds of international trade and different motivations for conducting international trade. So for example, there's mercantilism, absolute advantage, comparative advantage, Heckler, Olin, and I'll talk briefly on some of them. So one of the most one of the oldest among these is mercantilism, which originates back to maybe the 16th century or in Europe, and let's look at what it involves. In addition to country-based theories, you have organization-based theories, which could be product life cycle basis, like computers, the example that I'll give you, competitive advantage, regional economic cooperation. So there are various different country-based theories and organization-based theories. And let me touch on mercantilism to begin with. So this was dominant in Europe in the 16th century to 18th century. Basically here, it was very imbalanced in terms of the belief that the world wealth is static. So it is not growing, it's static, and that means those who accumulate the maximum are the powerful nations, and obviously few of the European nations would want to enhance, try to enhance their state power by maximizing and accumulating as much for themselves, even if it was at the cost of, other countries. So this was a historical form which really believed in power of the mighty and believed in accumulating as much for your own country versus participating in versus a more balanced approach to the entire world benefiting. Then you have your absolute advantage basis, where they believe that a country should provide or supply to international trade that which it most efficiently produces versus another country. So for example, you have India, which has low cost manpower. So as per this philosophy, one would say that India, which has low cost manpower, should most efficiently and best supply to global trade those products which are labor intensive. So we should focus on those products which are labor intensive and supply those to the global trade if we go by the absolute advantage theory. Now skilled manpower is obviously India's advantage. Low cost manpower is India's advantage. Likewise, you could have, benefits which could be specific to a country, which could be climatic conditions, which could be, various other advantages which are specific to that region and which can allow that region to use that advantage, whether it's climate, whether it's low-cost manpower, etc., to more efficiently produce certain goods and services versus the others and then bring those to the global trade. So some of the examples are, we have Hero Group, which is the largest two-wheeler company. We have Tata Steel, which is the, sixth largest manufacturer of steel globally. Again, very labor-intensive industries, where obviously India is contributing in a way where we can most efficiently produce these. Now, comparative advantage is again a theory which was put up in the early 1800s, and it is a theory which says that between the I can produce something more efficiently than another country. So if I can produce, maybe two countries, three countries are producing this, but if I can produce it more efficiently than the other, then I should participate at in this manner to what I contribute to the global trade. So this is how countries will use comparative advantage of relative productivity, what looks relatively more advantageous for me versus another country. Now, Heckler-Ohlin basis is believed that a country should produce what they have in abundance. So, if it is a natural resource and that natural resource is in abundance, then I should use that to go and contribute to the global economy with industries being supported by that abundance. This has also been called at different points of time factor production basis. For example, when you look at India, labor intensive industries I've already mentioned, you know, some of them, also textiles, gems, jewelry, etc. These could be, these are industries already contributing to our global trade and to our GDP. Then you have your product life cycle basis. For example, giving you the example of computers. So computers initially produced in the US, consumed by US, then later on for the production stage, the production moved to developing countries, various other parts of the world, because of competitive, because of advantages of low cost labor, efficiency, etc. And then from there, after the production is done, then they are sold again in developed countries. So you see the different stages, you know, initial production, then for production in developing countries and for sale in developed countries. So this is different reasons for sale, higher profit margins for, you know, production, lower cost, cost effectiveness. So this is an example of product life cycle basis due to which international trade is happening. In your even in your sale, if your saturation is reached, you know, then you have a decline stage and then you have to look for newer markets, both for production, both for selling. So look at the life cycle of a computer to understand how the different stages work. Then you have your competitive advantage basis. Now, when I was talking about absolute advantage, you had a situation where Saudi Arabia would be better at oil production, or Italy would be better at producing fast cars versus Japan would be better at producing electric vehicles. Versus that, you have your competitive advantage, which is talking about organizations which enjoy competitive advantages are better for doing international business in other organizations, in with other organizations in other countries. So there are various elements which come in: demand, supportive conditions, competition, various factors which come into play here. Now there are supply side, which include land, infrastructure, manpower, natural resources, etc. And of course, a lot of government support would come into play here to ensuring that this competitive advantage is being leveraged best for the company and then onward for the country to participate in international trade. Now, your demand is, of course, your market side, which, you know, could be because of you are providing a certain, you know, quality, you're providing a certain product standard, which give you a competitive edge and an advantage versus, you know, another organization elsewhere. Now, different advantages, whether it's absolute advantage, whether it is comparative advantage, whether it is the product life cycle advantage, a lot of these are one has to understand what one can leverage on in different countries to be able to leverage these to the maximum possible. Now, for example, in Saudi Arabia for oil production, or Italy for your car, racing car production, obviously there are very strong industry lobbies, lobbies that represent to the governments which provide and enable and create an environment where these can be best leveraged. You have your knowledge, which is very important. You have your skill set, which is very, very important. So it is very essential that employees top down understand these various elements and have the know-how of how to best produce and contribute, given that an enabling environment is created. Then you have your theories where there's no single theory which is seen as a motivating factor when it comes to conducting international business, but it is a combination of different theories which may be coming into play here. So this is your new basis where we have a combination of factors which are enabling international business. Now, international business is very complex. We could have never imagined that something like COVID is going to so severely impact. We couldn't even have imagined that after the flu which happened in the early 20th century, the Spanish flu, we could not even have envisaged that another flu-like situation would happen at a global level, given all our technological, medical, pharmaceutical advancements that we have. So how that ended up impacting is really, insane if you think of it. Likewise, in this day and age, till a couple of years ago, when the pandemic was ending and we thought, okay, the worst is behind us, we couldn't have imagined that an invasion of Ukraine would happen or the Middle East situation would escalate to such a level. Skirmishes have happened, of course, throughout, but all-out war in to the extent that it's happening, we had not anticipated and envisaged at all, which has affected both supply and demand side across for domestic and international trade, right from supply to energy prices to freight prices, to preferences, to protectionism, to almost every aspect. So international business is something which is can be very volatile and be influenced by factors other than business factors, which no one has any control over. Now, there are certain countries which become, better trading partners. For example, in the trade between India and China, even though India and China have a lot of political angst between the two countries, and a lot of border issues and a lot of other hostilities, when it comes to trading, we clearly have no problem being very large trading partners with each other. So when it comes to which countries one does trade with, there are a lot of elements, not just hostile border issue, and because of that we've gone and clamped down on everything. Of course we have not. So there is uncertainty, but the selection of which country one does trade with is also something which requires a very, very, very thorough understanding and lot of aspects and factors which go into deciding which country should you should be doing business with. Sometimes which country should become your most favored nation. Sometimes which country you should drop from your. For example, when countries started exiting Russia after the war, not all companies have exited Russia. Some of them, despite the hostilities and despite what Russia is doing in Ukraine, have chosen to stay put and not exited, whereas some have left, leaving behind revenue. Like there were some companies which left, like British Petroleum left within 3 days. So which country one does business with is not just a political decision. There could be trade wars, there could be various other elements based on which you choose how and why which country you should include in your basket or which country you should exclude. For example, when Britain decided to leave the EU, voted in 2016 to exit the EU. That is still not fully, been played out. It is still being streamlined, and the factors which would have gone into them exiting this very large trade bloc, you can imagine the kind of uncertainty that brings in for not just for Britain, but for the rest of the world also. So, as you are seeing, there are aspects right from economic, political, physical, social, across the board, you know, which are the determinants of how you do business, with who you do business, to what extent you allow the participation. All of these things become very, very instrumental when it comes to international business decisions. Now, some of the social aspects are you providing employment? That is very good. Are you leading to pollution in the region? Not good at all. Are you leading to, are you leading to any sort of disparity in income distribution? That is also not a desirable thing. Are you hurting local sentiments? Are you creating any sort of situation which is adversely affecting, the local population? All of these elements come in. The standard example which I keep giving is when McDonald's came into India. Think of the number of cultural factors they would have had to deal with when it came to India, not just from their product offerings, but also from their, creation of their the cooking material, the oils, etc. So many, when IKEA came into India, IKEA has products in other parts of the world, which sometimes have elements of cow herd or cow hoofs in those products. Now, IKEA, can you imagine the kind of thinking that would have gone into the product offerings being allowed in India? Because obviously they cannot, despite wanting consistency and standardization, they cannot disregard the religion, ethnicity, etc. in India and offer those products here, or not just in the stores, but even online they cannot be offered. So many aspects drive, over and above just the commercial aspects. Economic aspects we are very familiar with in terms of, your supply, demand. There are a lot of production-linked incentive schemes that I'll be touching on. Lot of export promotion zones, lot of export promotion councils, whether it is silk, whether it lot of export promotion councils, whether it's silk, whether it's textile, various others which go into supporting from the economic side. Of course, for India, Make in India is one of the biggest pushes that we are seeing. Atmanirbhar India, Make in India, and when we were talking in the past about production facilities being shifted, whether it is Apple production facility in South India, whether it is the German footwear moving to Uttar Pradesh, a lot of these things are obviously being pushed by an enabling environment being created by the government of India, which is attracting companies into moving to India versus other parts of the world. Of course, you have your physical environment. You have to recognize the element of growth for the local population. For example, when I was talking about the tiger economies, it's not just at a political and an economic level that the economies grew, but at a level for poverty alleviation and for the lifestyle of the local population being elevated in those countries, the literacy rates going up in those countries, all of that was also in sync with the growth, economic growth in those countries. The international business scenario in 2023 is very, very dynamic, very volatile, with situations in the Middle East, with Eastern Europe, with what is happening on international waters. So one has to take all of these into account while devising an international strategy for conducting business. These issues are impacting both on supply and demand side. Now we have the US elections coming up. We don't know whether it's going to be Kamala Harris or whether it's going to be Donald Trump. Both these things impact India and the world. As I was telling you, Trump is a lot more protectionist and nationalist in terms of promoting local businesses versus international businesses, in terms of keeping the wall vis-a-vis Mexico, which would affect labor, which would affect so many other things, in terms of embargoes, in terms of insisting that the US dollar stays the main reserve currency for the world. So while politically the president of the US is president of the US, but that impacts, whatever happens in the next couple of months is going to impact global trade all over. So all of these elements come into play. Overall, we have to keep in mind that versus China, with this China plus one strategy happening, we should try it, we India as a country with a very positive demographic spread, with a large labor force, with a low-cost labor force, with an enabling IT environment where digitally we have managed to empower our economy, where we have this Make in India, where we have this push for Atmanirbhar Bharat, where we are 35 years, almost 35 years post-liberalization. We should be in a situation where we are pushing our exports to newer markets, newer products, creating an environment where excessive dependencies on anyone which could affect us are not there, and also leveraging our and not squandering away our domestic advantages that we have, whether it is in terms of climate, whether it is in terms of natural resources, whether it is in terms of labor or policies. So we have to make the most of all of these and try to ensure that if people are moving away from China or other parts, then we should try to capitalize on those and become a preferred partner and benefit from that. Thank you.